some stories and examples from the Gospel of Luke about Jesus welcoming the lowly and about those who were not welcoming the lowly. Before I get started, I want to make a quick announcement. Will Atwood, I just heard earlier this morning, he's going to have back surgery on Tuesday. See if you can keep Will Atwood in your prayers. He has back surgery on Tuesday. If anyone wants a copy of the handout, Dan has them here if you want to raise your hand. I got a lot out, but I might not have hit everybody. So we're going to look at the Gospel of Luke, and we'll pick up, I think the first reading is going to be in chapter 5. It turns out, as I was getting this lesson ready and a few other different lessons in mind and putting them in the right order, and then I'm getting ready for my Bible classes, it wasn't on purpose that Amos, and in particular Amos 1 and 2, and the idea about in that lesson in chapter 1 of Amos, chapters 1 and 2, where I brought out that the Israelites are hearing these sermons about all the bad guys that they don't like around them, and they're probably amening it, and then it turns out that the sermon, the conclusion of the sermon was about them themselves, and talked about how it's so easy for us to then read the Gospel of Amos. It's not at all the good news of Amos. To read the prophetic doom that Amos pronounces and have that same reaction. Look at how bad they were, look at what they were doing, and it's important for us to think about ourselves as well. And Scott really made a strong point talking about, brought it down to the simplistic term, the blue team versus the A team, blue team versus the red team, and how we get ourselves worked up that the other team is genuinely bad and evil and wrong. And we can do that on something as simple as a sports field and as something as drastic as a battlefield, and just how unchristian-like that sort of mindset is. And we need to be very careful about that. That ended up being really what this morning's lesson is about. And I want to, I didn't mean for them to time out this way, but I think that it's pretty interesting in that sense. I'm just going to use a few stories of Jesus interacting with people and consider the way other people reacted both to Jesus and to other individuals. So in Luke chapter 5, verse 27, after this he went out and saw a tax collector named Levi sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me," and leaving everything he rose and followed him. And Levi made him a great feast in his house, and there was large company of tax collectors and others reclining at table with them. And the Pharisees and their scribes grumbled at his disciples, saying, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" And Jesus answered them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but the sinners to repentance." The Pharisees and their scribes grumble. And I also want to point out, they don't do this at Jesus, they do it to the disciples. So they're doing these backdoor grumblings and problem makings. This is a destructive and ugly behavior. Why are you eating and drinking with tax collectors and sinners? Earlier in the verse, it was tax collectors and others. The word others has been graduated to the concept of sinners. And that's kind of the way, that's the problem that we run into. There's us and others, and eventually we make it us and sinners, whether we're talking church, spiritual things, or even just the ball field. That's the way that we tend to go, and it's ugly. When you look up the word grumble, it's not a complex word. It means murmur, mutter, grumble, to say anything against another in a low tone. It means exactly the same thing then as it does now. Bad speech, not even in the face of somebody, but murmuring it in the background. Did Levi's dinner hurt the Pharisees? Maybe they wanted to go. But even if they wanted to go, did Levi having a bunch of people over for dinner hurt them? It's one of those moments, stay in your lane. And we can see right here from the beginning, it's a completely bad attitude that has consumed these people. The highfalutin ones are scoffing and scorning and condemning. I looked up highfalutin. There's not a really good definition, although everyone agrees what highfalutin means. Jesus, on the other hand, answers, "You know, doctors are for sick people. I haven't come to call the righteous, but the sinners to repentance. It's such a fabulous, fabulous statement. He's showing just exactly what he was about. Jesus sought those in need to help their infirmity. That's what he came to do. He came and he looked for people who had needs. And when he found those who had needs, he did what he could to help their infirmities. And likewise, those who had needs were seeking after Jesus because they had needs, because they were sick or infirm, whether literally in their body or spiritually and in their heart. And we even have the great funny story of Zacchaeus, who practically makes a fool of himself. And whether he made himself a fool or not, he's now a kid's story of climbing up a tree because he wanted to see Jesus and he was too short to see him. I don't know why anyone would make fun of somebody short like that. But it's a funny story. And it just shows he did not care because he was sick. Whatever in his life was making him sick or infirm, or needing Jesus, that's what sick means in this context. He didn't care what he looked like or what being up a tree meant in his community. He was gonna do everything he could to seek out Jesus who could make those things right. He risked his social standing, I guess. What about people who don't have needs? And we have to really be careful when we say this because who doesn't have needs? The people who didn't have any needs did not seek Jesus because they didn't have any needs. And I have to put a giant question mark in there. I think in the handout, I even put things in quotation marks. I don't want these handouts to go out there and to get lost into space and people say, Dan believes that people don't have needs. We all have needs. Who doesn't have needs? Who doesn't need Jesus? Who isn't sick? Who does not need the Lord? When I was teaching this class, this section to a class of like 5 to 11-year-olds, they all got that point. When Jesus said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick, I have not come to call the righteous, but the sinners to repentance. I don't know if the 5-year-olds got it on their own, but the older kids, they were sitting there thinking about it, and they recognized, well, everyone's sick. Everyone needs Jesus. I mean, this is a point that is super clear. Do you think that the Pharisees couldn't put two and two together and realize what Jesus sent right back at them? But this is the problem that Jesus was dealing with. Because their grumbling, their scoffing, and their scorning, you look up scoff or scorn in Proverbs, and somewhat in the Psalms, but especially in the Proverbs, it is a deadly word. It is an awful word. It is a lot like the word fool. The fool in the Proverbs is the worst. The grumbling and the scoffing and the scorning is an attack on Christ. It discredits everything that was good. They're grumbling about the only one who was good. Their grumbling and scoffing and scorning destroys those weak ones. It's going to hurt the disciples who are trying to understand Jesus and hang on to him. It's definitely going to hurt the tax collectors and the sinners because they're getting thrown under that. These highfalutin ones, these lordly ones, they're great ones, and they're emptying the worth of what Christ is doing. And so we see in Luke 15, you can turn there if you want, but really just the key verses I want to read are the first two. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near unto Jesus, and the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. How did that make the tax collectors and sinners feel? John talks about how the light has come into this world. And what do most people do with that light? They want to flee from that light because they don't want their deeds to be exposed. And here in Luke 15:1, people are having their deeds exposed and they're willing to come up to Jesus. And that's a nerve-wracking, scary thing to do. And they're getting scorned. What did Jesus do? He gave us one of the greatest chapters in the Bible. Not defending sin, but defending the lost who need to be found and brought back home. And we get three powerful parables about God's interest and care for those lost and for those lowly, weak ones. So what we have here, and I didn't know what word to use, the lordly ones, the highfalutin ones, you know, put in whatever word you want there, but be careful because we don't want to start scoffing and scorning them for scoffing and scorning others. Those high and mighty ones, they're grumbling and they're scoffing and they're scorning, and it kills. And I just want to pull out some of these examples. And the Pharisees and their scribes grumbled at his disciples, saying, "Why do you eat and drink with," you could put on any word, "people like that?" 5:33. "And they said to him, 'The disciples of John fast often and offer prayers, as do the disciples of the Pharisees, but yours do something different.'" 6:2. "Some of the Pharisees says, 'Why are you doing what isn't lawful on the Sabbath?'" 7:39. "And when the Pharisees that invited him saw this, he said to himself, 'If this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who is touching him, for she is a sinner.'" And 11:15, "But some of them said, 'He casts out demons by Beelzebul, the prince of demons.'" And then 15:2, like we saw just a moment ago, "The Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.'" Not all of these are about people. They're all in that realm of grumbling and destructive language is going to pull out the foundation of those who are trying to hold on to Jesus or be interested in Jesus. But in particular, 5:30, 7:39, and 15:2, they are complaining and grumbling about that person. And they're tearing them down. And the way the Pharisee speaks in 7:39 is just gross. If he was a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who's touching him, because she's a sinner. I wouldn't let her touch me. And we, because we are human beings, get into circumstances where we think, I don't want that person to touch me. And that's just not good. It's real. We shouldn't pretend it never happens. Some of us are better than others. But there are people, and we're afraid, or we're upset, or we don't like, or there's something wrong. What is it that Jesus did in all these circumstances? These are passages where people are rejected and they receive harsh judgment. We often call this sort of thing just prejudice, or as the Bible calls it sometimes, being a respecter of persons. Now, when they say these things and they ask these questions, is it because the Pharisees want to learn anything? Or is it a question designed only to discredit? Why are you doing what's unlawful? They're not trying to understand the people. They're not trying to understand Jesus. It's a question that is a bit of laughter. They're trying to shade and darken the situation as opposed to Jesus, who's trying to illuminate it. They're trying to destroy hope. I don't know if that's what they mean to do, but that's really what they end up doing. They're destroying hope in others who are trying to reach out to Jesus. And it dismisses both the teacher, his teaching, and it also dismisses the people who are interested. It's just ugly. It's absolutely ugly. And it shows up in all sorts of different formats. It's the in circle. It's those special chairs at the lunch table when you're in middle school that you never got to sit at. And then you take out middle school and put in the workplace. You take out the workplace and you put it the sports team. Or, you know, and any of these Thanksgiving dinner, I never got to sit at the cool, I don't know what the cool table is at Thanksgiving, but that, it shows up in all the different environments and all these different kinds of circumstances. And it's this in-circle kind of problem. They are trying to keep other people out and nurture themselves within. They have a lot of judgment on everyone who's out. And they neglect to look with any sincerity in judging themselves within. And that's just evil. It's just absolute evil. Matthew 23 is a really good chapter for this, and I recommend for your homework that you write a 3-page essay, double-spaced, on Matthew 23. Just walk through the chapter. Find the verses that are behaving this way. We'll read a little bit here. We'll read the first 12 verses or so, and the whole chapter just repeats this as it goes on and on and on. Matthew 23, "When Jesus said to the crowds and to the disciples, 'The scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat, so do and observe whatever they tell you, but not the works that they do, for they preach, but they don't practice. They tie up heavy burdens hard to bear and lay them on people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to move them with a finger. They do all their deeds to be seen by others.'" And it goes on and on and on talking about this. They're creating problems for other people to deal with, and then they don't live that way. They don't do that thing. I am up here telling you all the things you need to do, and then I go home and I act like a scoundrel. We don't want that to be. That's wrong. Verse 13, you shut the kingdom of heaven in people's faces, for you neither enter yourselves nor allow others who would enter in. Isn't that exactly the way they were behaving? They were keeping so many people out, but do you think they were going in themselves, spiritually even? And in verse 15, you travel across the sea to sea and land to make a single proselyte. And when he becomes a proselyte, you make him twice as much a child of hell as you are. They're going out to far distant places to win someone to God, not staying at home and doing the job. And when they finally do, they make him awful. They make him worse than themselves. You clean the outside of the cup. And again, what they're doing is they're making themselves great and making others low. They're refusing to examine themselves within, and they have a jolly time examining everything about everybody else. That's so easy to do. That's so easy for us to do. It's easy for us to do it in our family. It's easy for us to do it just with among our siblings, our cousins, our town versus their town, north versus south, east versus west. It's always a right versus wrong. And this is not the way to behave. It's completely the opposite of the way we are supposed to behave. We're supposed to be known by our love. And so love isn't just going to recklessly judge outsiders. And it is definitely not going to ignorantly ignore ourselves. I mean, there's going to be judgment. There's going to be examination. We need to look out at the world. We need to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. But we can't just be ugly and reject all these sorts of people and then ignore our own faults. We need to love and act in a loving way. And so we need to work hard to refuse this hypocrisy in our lives. This is a problem. I was seeing it in a specific avenue, you know, things that are maybe happening out there today. And then I realized it's not happening today. It's happening all days. This isn't new. It's a forever idea. And we can complain about it happening in the politics, or we can complain about it happening in the business, or we can complain about it happening between North and South. And it's going to show up in all these different ways. And so we have to arm ourselves and wake up to the fact that we can't engage in it in politics or at work, and absolutely not here in our home. The reality is, this is the way the scribes and the Pharisees judged. They judged others, they judged outsiders. They grumbled about those other kinds of people. It's a good thing the apostles never did that themselves, right? Jesus, there's some guy doing some stuff and he won't follow us, and so we're trying to make him stop. Or the better one, Jesus, they wouldn't let us into their town. What if we bring fire from heaven and burn the town down? Good night. These are the apostles. I wonder if it was the fact that it was a Samaritan town which put them in the mood to. I wouldn't want to burn a good town, but a Samaritan town, I don't care. I can guess the regional and cultural problems that were feeding that kind of thing. So this isn't just, well, people out there in the world do this, which is the problem that we're already complaining about, people who say it's only a world thing. The apostles behaved this way as well and needed to get corrected in that, and Jesus absolutely corrected them. And we may very well behave that way too, and we need to correct it ourselves. The world, originally in my notes, I was typing our society today, and I was like, I need to take it out. It's just world. This is just worldliness. It's always been that way. It's always going to be this way. The world condemns, the world judges, the world vilifies. The world calls names and labels people as unworthy, and if they get pushed even farther, you're going to hear that they're using labels that basically they're not even human anymore. That's the way that the world is going to behave, and we cannot behave that way. Because the world is ignoring Jesus' all-important statement Why do you see the speck that's in your brother's eye and do not notice the log that is in your own eye? We need to be honest and sincere. We need to have pure hearts. And yes, we're going to have to help people with other kinds of problems. And we always have to recognize our failures in the past and our difficulties that we're dealing with now. We need to be honest and sincere, because this is the way that Jesus behaved. We already know that he ate with tax collectors and sinners. He also said, let the kids come too. Oh, but they're just dumb kids. I love saying dumb kids when there's kids in the room. I've done it in classes all the time. Kids know they're not dumb, but they're afraid that all the adults think that they're dumb. And Jesus said, let the kids come here. Who wasn't letting kids come see Jesus? The apostles. Again, there's that exclusion thing that, oh, I didn't realize maybe kids do need Jesus. Well, why wouldn't a child need, oh, Jesus is busy. When is God too busy, right? It's not necessarily that the apostles were terrible people when they kept the children away. I don't think they opened their eyes to think about it. And that's the problem that we're going to get ourselves into if we don't slow down and think about the things that we are doing. Now, let's be honest. Jesus did warn people. Look at Luke 14. He didn't just welcome in things and peoples and ideas and just throw it all behind him and say everything's okay. He did say in Luke 14, 26. Well, I'll start in 25. Now the great crowds accompanied him, and he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and doesn't hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yea, even his own life, he can't be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? You can keep reading that on your own. Jesus did say, think about things. But when you look at this, he's not trying to exclude. He's welcoming people in and training them how to judge themselves for themselves. You need to think about what you're getting into. And when you're a disciple of Christ, when you're with that family, you're going to have to be the kind of person who is willing to, and you read through this paragraph and you find out what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to carry your own cross. He's not trying to push people away. He's helping them come in a way that they will stay. He's helping us to realize that when I am a disciple of Christ, I need to think about myself, and I need to recognize what is my family doing to pull me away from God or to push me out of the church? What am I doing about avoiding my cross to bear? Am I hiding from my responsibilities? Am I hiding from the scorn of the world and hiding my Christianity and not letting my light shine? We need to be able to look at ourselves. And so I think that this is still fitting with what Jesus had been telling them the whole time. He's not excluding. He's helping those who want to come in know how to come in. And so what do we need to do? Well, just don't talk in such a jerk, hate-filled way. Bridle your tongue. If anyone thinks he's religious and doesn't bridle his tongue, he deceives his heart, and his person's religion is worthless. Religion that's pure and undefiled before God our Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, to keep oneself unstained from the world. You need to hold your tongue, you need to do good things, and you need to stay pure. And you're going to have to look at yourself and say, am I holding my tongue? Am I doing good things? And am I living a pure life? And if one of those three are starting to slide back, you need to get up and do that. We need to be busy with this sort of behavior. We need to welcome other people. And this is going to be welcoming them into the building, welcoming them into our lives. There's a lot of different ways that this is going to show up. If I finally make it to the cool kids table at lunch, I need to welcome other people to the cool kids table. Whether that's literally a table at lunch or we're talking spiritually. We need to go, for example, teach a Gentile even when it's uncomfortable. And you can take the word Gentile out and put anything you want in here. Peter showed up to talk to Cornelius, and he said, you yourselves know how unlawful it is for a Jew to associate or visit with any other nation, but God has showed me that I should not call any person common or unclean. I don't think that that sentence means that Peter felt super calm and at ease. I think he felt uncomfortable. And he brought other Jewish men with him, and they all felt uncomfortable. We got to figure out how this is going to be. We need to go and reach out and welcome and do the hard things. And then in the next chapter, when they said, hey, you went to uncircumcised men and ate with them, he stood up and he explained to them in order. I know, that makes you feel uncomfortable what I did. And now your discomfort's making me feel uncomfortable. I need to stand up and say this was the right thing to do. And if somebody explains it, we need to be like the guys in Acts 11 and say, wow, okay, this was the right thing. It seems weird to me, but it was the right thing. That's hard. And we also not just need to be welcoming to others, we need to examine ourselves clearly. I don't mean to say we need to be like Paul and start condemning people right and left, but here are three good examples. Paul condemned a man who had his father's wife. Of course, that's a bad sin. And then he condemned the church because they didn't do anything about it, and they didn't condemn it. He spoke the truth. You need to handle sin by calling it out, saying it's wrong, and change the sinner's ways and change your ways. When Peter stopped associating with the Gentiles, he called Peter out on that because it was hurting those people and it was hurting other people in the church, and he called him out on that. That's not right behavior. I'm sure that was uncomfortable, but it was already uncomfortable because of what he was doing, and the only way to get out of that was going through the hard thing. What about the end of Philippians when two ladies' names are called out because they're not getting along? And for the rest of time, we all know who they were. That's a little uncomfortable. But he called them out on it, and then he called the church to ask them to work with them on that. We need to be careful. The world really wants to judge everyone else and then make excuses for itself. Come down hard. I want to come down hard on you, but give myself a lot of excuses on why I can act a certain way. And we need to be the opposite of the world. We need to welcome outsiders in, not permit sin, but welcome those who are struggling, those who are sick spiritually. And I need to take all that judgment that the world likes to hurl at others, and I need to take that judgment and that examination, and I need to aim it at myself so that I will live a pure and right life. There's a lot of denominations that seem to have that backwards. A lot of ugliness happening on the inside, and they're yelling at people out there in the world. A lot of political teams that have it completely backwards. A lot of ugliness on the inside of the politics, and they're yelling at everyone out there. And you can put that on all. I don't know if they're doing that at middle school tables. I hope not. Middle school lunch tables. But man, when we turn into adults, we can get pretty nasty. And we need to live an opposite way of the world. All right, the psalm we're going to read is Luke 13. I wasn't thinking of a good psalm, and I just decided that this little story is going to be the wrap-up for the whole thing. I think it works that way. So turn to Luke 13. Think about this woman. She has this spirit that has ruined her life. How does she feel, and how does she feel when others speak? And then think about the words of Jesus. How is he treating this lady? How are the other people treating the lady? Think about those hypocrites. What is their motivation? What are they saying? What are they trying to do? And what are some of the disastrous consequences of their words? So I'm going to read Luke 13, 10 through 17, and the lesson will be yours. Now, he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and behold, there was a woman who had a disabling spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not fully straighten herself. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said to her, "Woman, you are freed from your disability." And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight, and she glorified God. But the ruler of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, said to the people, "There are 6 days in which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be healed, and not on the Sabbath day." Then the Lord answered him, "You hypocrites, does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox and donkey from the manger and lead it away to water it? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day?" As he said these things, all his adversaries were put to shame, and all the people rejoiced at the glorious things that were done by him. How do you think she felt when Jesus healed her? And how do you think she felt if she heard that ugly, grouchy, grumbling statement? And that's the destruction that we need to stay away from. Because if our words and our attitudes and our behavior is destroying the ones for whom Christ has died, Jesus is going to do something with us so that, in verse 17, we will be put to shame. We might be put to shame here on earth, and people see it. Maybe that would be a blessing. If our cheeks turn red enough, we'll stop and change our ways. But if we don't get shamed here on earth, we're going to be put to shame hereafter. And that's it. And we've lost our chance because we've destroyed people. All because of our own self-defense, all because of our own selfishness, all because of our own pride. Sisters and brothers, let's not act that way. Let's remember just how important it is to love, to reach out, to welcome in, and to look at our own problems, admit them, get help from God, and get help from each other. If that's what we are doing, we are going to let God's light shine in a world that's acting upside down. We'll let the light shine. We'll show people what it means to be with God and the blessing that they can have with God. And God will be praised, and people will be blessed by that. I don't know what you're thinking about right now. I don't know if you've been living this sort of hypocritical life or behavior, or I don't know if you've just taken the time to look at yourself in the imaginary spiritual mirror. Maybe you need help. We're here for you. We're not going to shun and exclude and call you names the way the world does. We want to pray with you. We want to help you, because I need prayers too, and I need help too. If there's anyone here who needs help or prayers, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing.